Good morning. How's everybody doing? Is everybody awake? Well, you're here. I guess that's half the battle, right? So I'm Henry Shulman.
Alfred.
And Steve, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Steve.
Alfred Ojukwu.
Right, we're all from Microsoft Consulting, Boston-based, Dallas, and New York. All right, so we're here for integrating new Microsoft Application Virtualization 5.0 with other virtualization solutions. That's why we had the line music before, so that was the picture with the theme.
Wait a second. So honestly, I'm trying to see how you guys are going to wake up. So looking at this face, we actually see folks are just kind of sitting here watching. We want you guys to wake up, so go ahead and everyone just stand up for a second. Stand up, stand up, stand up. There you go. Stand up, stand up. There we go. Click the button.
Right? And a little stretching. Yeah, there we go.
Press the button. And we want you to get up and yawn. That's what you guys look like right now. Now, really, come on. Let's wake up, guys. Yawn. Everyone, if you have to yawn, get it out.
We had get, a great get the time roar out. Time. Ready?
There you go. We want to have some fun today. There you go. So our session's really just going to keep you moving forward with a lot of the conversations you've heard all week around Citrix, around AppV and some of the MDOT products. Specifically, we're focusing on application virtualization and how it integrates with other solutions. Now, I'm going to warn you because one of the challenges we ran into is some of the components that are required, for example, that we need for Citrix aren't available yet. However, we were hoping to be able to kind of demo that. We may not be able to. We won't be able to demo that today for you. If you were available and were able to go to Tony Sanchez's session yesterday, he covered the Citrix and AppV components, how they work together. So we'd want to refer you to that session as well.
Because we're going to cover similar content. On Steve now. What's this? There we go.
So the agenda is going to pretty much go like this. We're going to start with AppV5, a brief review and overview. We're going to assume that most of you are already somewhat familiar with AppV5, at least this week or possibly prior to coming to TechEd. We're going to talk about how AppV5 will work with Citrix as part of the Microsoft and Citrix Partner Alliance. And then we're going to talk about integrating multiple solutions like AppV and UEV and how we can deliver these applications that provide both state-separated and virtualized application assets and user experience assets with System Center. Then we're going to talk about desktop virtualization and VDI and some of the challenges and pitfalls of VDI and look into how we can use user experience virtualization and storage virtualization, you'll find out what I mean by that as well, to simplify deployment in your VDI environment or if you decide to take these features into other types of implementations of AppV as well. Then we're going to talk about rapid provisioning and how you can, if you're building out an AppV infrastructure, especially a backend, we're going to talk about server AppV and how you can take advantage of service virtualization to provide rapid provisioning of scaling out solutions.
So for the many of you may already be familiar with AppV, and we wanted to just give you a quick slide of an overview of where AppV has come from over the years.
Actually, let's take a poll on that. Who's using 4X right now? AppV 4X. How many are you using 5? Okay. How many of you don't know AppV at all? Okay. Go ahead.
Great. So we start in 2006 with the acquisition of SoftGrid. And at that point, it was used for desktop virtualization as well as for remote client desktop virtualization as well. So as we progressed over time, we see the maturity of the application as it moves into a much more mature state over the years. And we've moved it from MDOP, we renamed it to MDOP 2008 to 2010, and all the way up until it was supported with Windows 7, and then later on with Configuration Manager 2007. So over the years, you see this progression of where we're starting to integrate AppFi into other solutions and making it part of the basic framework of delivering a virtual application. All the way to last September or so, we then integrated with System Center 2012. And now what we have is the ability to deliver both clients and do migrations from 4.6 to 5.0 using the AppFi tools, using the AppFi client itself. And now we have the ability to run AppFi 5.0 on Windows 8. So moving forward, we now have MDOP 2013, which is also available. And before I move forward, before we go too much further, we have someone in the back here, Kevin. He should be passing out surveys. And if you haven't received one yet, or if you haven't filled one out, I believe they're doing surveys to kind of get a picture of what you are doing with
some research response.
Either AppFi or UEV or any MDOT product. So make sure you grab one before you leave and fill that out for him.
And it's not just a suggestion box. We want all your feedback, even complaints and grievances as well.
And you can drop them off with us up front and we'll get them over to the MDOT group.
I'd like to start off with a quote. Former Microsoft employee, now with a partner, told me one time, embrace the tyranny of the or. Wait a minute. Actually, it's supposed to be reject the tyranny of the or. That's not the quote I meant, Henry. But the idea is to leverage our partners, take advantage of our partners, take advantage of all the solutions that integrate. We would love for you to have a complete Microsoft stack involving AppFi, but you don't have to. If you want to integrate with Citrix as your session-based solution, if you want to interface with AppSense as opposed to UEV, AppFi is designed to work with the Microsoft stack or with a partner stack or a hybrid stack. Yes, it works well with that company who shall not be mentioned.
Actually, you can embrace the tyranny of the or, because we need to discuss it at least. Okay, so when you have the issues of do we want low cost or high quality, okay, which is usually one of the main proponents in the return on investment analysis, we want to be able to propose why can't we do both? Okay, get the best of both worlds and not have to compromise or try to not compromise in our solutions. So AppFi 5.0, how does it work? So most of you know how it works. There's a few here that said you didn't know anything about AppFi. So in terms of being able to decouple an application from an operating system, that's where we're getting the benefit of AppFi. So most people know about the decoupling of the operating system from the hardware, which means you can run multiple operating systems on one piece of hardware, which is very popular. So we go to the next level up and we say, okay, now we want to decouple the application from the operating system. What does that actually mean? That means that instead of installing an application and having it write files to C program files, also to the registry locally, et cetera, we're going to have it capture that information. Now, what's a little tricky in 5.0, you could potentially put it in the C program files, you could put it wherever you want. You're actually applying the virtual file system onto the local file system as opposed to a self-contained package, which we had in the form of an SFT for the 4X version. So by decoupling the application from the operating system, there's a lot of efficiencies in terms of loading and unloading the application and having a base image that can be more easily managed and as far as troubleshooting as well. Okay, the design goals achieved: increased integration. We were just talking about the virtual file system. Okay, so we got rid of the SFT file. We got rid of the OSD files. We now have XML files for configurations and the AppV file, which is the actual package file. Increased flexibility. In my opinion, I think that's one of the biggest advantages of 5.0. whereas previously we had to deal with a app per app configuration of the OSD file, we can now centralize that in the form of a connection group to manage application interdependencies. And increased manageability through increasing implementation of PowerShell use, we can have fully automated implementations for adding to the client, for publishing, mounting, and deployment. Okay, working with Citrix.
So as mentioned before, we had a session. There was a session earlier by Tony Sanchez that covered the Citrix requirements and the Citrix partnership we had. For over 23 years, we've had that relationship with them, ensuring that we could deliver applications in a good way using their solution as well. AppV integrates well with that. The key thing here to remember is that we've been working together to make sure that we could increase the availability of application virtualization using AppV 5.0. One thing that Citrix has done has been to utilize AppV 5.0 as a first-class application delivery method within their infrastructure. So with the move towards Zen Desktop 7 and the overall move towards a newer version, AppV 5.0 becomes a key component of it. And you'll see it here. It provides that integration. Again, the demo that we would have loved to show is not available at this point. And you know, I don't know if there's anything you guys want to add really quick.
Well, again, I would just refer you to Tony Sanchez's presentation, which is pretty comprehensive. The one thing I want to point out is you don't necessarily have to wait for the most recent version of XenApp. I have worked a couple of engagements where we were provisioning AppV 5 with XenApp 6.5 and the current version of Zen Desktop. They're just we had to construct a little bit of special sauce to kind of get the publishing of the actual applications out to the Citrix desktops. But it is a possible. It can work. And it does work well. The problem is we don't have yet a conduit in place that works with 5.0 for XenApp 6.5 like we had with AppV 4.6.
Are you willing to share that secret sauce?
PowerShell.
The question was, are you willing to share that secret sauce?
And stay tuned to my blog, blogs.techdebt.com, GladiatorMSFT. And I will be posting an upcoming blog on how we crafted using PowerShell a seamless integration so you don't have to necessarily publish out that. One of the problems you run into with the XenApp console is if you're actually trying to publish the application by its executable, well, you know, if you've worked with AppV5 and the package root, that can be a very long path because we store the gold package in AppV5 when you're publishing and targeting machines in the actual package store, which contains in its path the version GUID and the package GUID. So there are several people have been very creative. Some have tried symbolic links to actually publish them out, but some people have leveraged PowerShell and some extensible XML as well. But we will be publishing that. At least I will be publishing that. But caveat emptor, standard disclaimer applies.
To take a little downshift, in case you're not aware of Citrix. So Citrix is another use case for presentation of applications. So we're talking about AppV being delivered through a standalone server, an AppV system with the client and a server. We're talking about AppV packages being delivered with configuration manager, okay, again, to the endpoints. And then when we go to the Citrix scenario, we're talking about a server that's serving up the applications through a connection. Okay. So the benefit of AppV is that we can create one package and have it delivered to all of those endpoints.
So again, here we see that XenApp, you can just go ahead and directly publish it to XenApp, you know, directly. You can manage it using the Citrix receiver, and lastly, you can subscribe to the AppV packages using the Citrix receiver. Again, unfortunately, the key here is to make sure that you're aware that the integration exists, and then in addition to that, we have the AppV integration with Zen Desktop 7, and that's basically the preferred streaming engine. In order to demo this, we would have to have their secret sauce, and we don't have it yet. So what we've been trying to do is make sure you guys are aware of that and make sure you're watching that session as well.
So it says a lot that Citrix has actually deferred to the AppV streaming engine. So in case you weren't aware of that, that's a big move for them.
So that's one example of integration. So here are some of the few benefits that you gain from integrating with AppV with Citrix. Again, the ability to provide remote desktop services to other devices other than non-Windows devices, which again extends the capability that AppV provide. You can use the AppV shared content as well and have the data be available in a non-persistent desktops scenario. And as Steve mentioned, there is some integration with 6.5 and Configuration Manager 2012.
And if you weren't aware of that, there was a connector which is vastly improved. So that allows you to run from Configuration Manager basically the same steps that you're running at the Citrix Management Console in the form of publishing the application, but you could do it from the Config Manager console.
To continue forward, you can run the same AppV packages on various platforms. You see that as an option as well, and just sequencing is made a little bit easier. Citrix also has the ability to use AppDNA to sequence applications. Again, we have our own AppV sequencer engine. All of these are just options that AppV sort of leverages to extend provide a little bit more extensibility to other products. So that gives you sort of an overview of how AppV and Citrix are working together. Again, the demo will be able to show you a little bit more. We're doing the session again in TechEd Europe, and hopefully we'll have that available to show you then.
So you'll be able to pull it from that event after the conference.
And there is the demo.
So as I said, AppV5 and Zen App 6.5, it still can be done. The publishing process requires a little bit of custom integration. There are some issues to watch out for right now with regards to integrating profile management with the AppV5 differences. Right now, AppV5, for example, does not support network folder redirection. That is being addressed. I've received lots of feedback about that because one of the first things people like to do is they like to redirect app data. And have any of you come into that problem in your exploration of AppV5? Yes, you can stop yelling at us. We heard you loud and clear, and we're looking into it.
Oh no, this one's here. This one's here.
So, we talk about using AppV in a Citrix environment. We're going to move forward and move into the Configuration Manager. Again, this is a no-brainer, but a lot of times we don't think about how efficient this is. We know we have the AppV management server and the AppV management console to actually facilitate the delivery of applications. But the fact that we can now integrate it into the Configuration Manager, both 2007 and 2012. Again, for 2012, it's just AppV 5.0. Most of you guys should be aware of that already. And once you go through the sequencer, have the application available, deliver it to the distribution point, and then from there you can deliver it to any of the remote desktop destinations that you have available. So that's another way that application virtualization is sort of becoming a much more versatile application use scenario. So let's kind of move forward. Let's move forward here again. What happens is you now have the ability to not just deliver a single application using Configuration Manager. You can use deployment types, so you can have the option to use a ZenApp connector, which we sort of hinted at earlier, which then delivers the application to a ZenApp infrastructure. You can deliver it side by side with a normal MSI or a virtual application, and you have other methods of delivering applications that are available. So a host of options that if you're needing to deliver the application that you can leverage Configuration Manager to use. But most importantly, AppV is now a top option when it comes to delivering applications to an end user desktop. Okay? And for those of you guys who aren't familiar with what has changed between AppView 4.6 and 5.0, we see a lot of enabled support for application dependencies. So we talked about that in our other session, at virtual application connections and virtual application extensions. We now have application environment, the ability to use the environment delivery process and configuration manager, which we'll show you a little bit later what it looks like. The improved update behavior that we now see, and then you have the ability to select different things that you want to publish from the application itself. We have things like instant icon gratification for unlock events. So it's the minute you unlock the system, you have access to that application, and you have the integration with RDS as an option. And things that we also have is the content improvement, the ability to stream that application down or have that application streamed all the way down and have it available on the endpoint. It basically reduces the app footprint, so you don't have to wait for that system to slowly generate that information down. It's already on that system and stored in the cache itself. So just a few important points that you want to make sure you're aware of. And with the Configuration Manager, Service Pack 1 console, you have the ability to deliver both 4.6 or 5.0. So for those of you guys that are going through a migration scenario and you're moving to a newer platform, you don't have to wait you can have both clients running at the same time. And as you upgrade to a newer version, you can then create a new deployment type, new application type, and send it down to the system, and then remove the older version as needed. So Configuration Manager helps out with those things.
Also, if you're already a 4X shop and you have a bunch of apps already sequenced, you can use the PowerShell tools to do a conversion and not have to worry about, this one worked in 4.6 and may have an issue in 5.0. We can have both environments running at the same time until those issues are resolved.
So to show you some of the settings that you'll see, the options that show up on the actual app, the package itself, is slightly different from the other MSIs or the other two deployment types, where you can actually decide to persist the data in the content cache. You can stream the content down from the distribution point. So you have a number of options, and you can fall back to other distribution points as needed. So I'm going to move past this, because I want to get to the demo piece where we kind of talk about what this looks like for you. But firstly, before we move into that, the other piece that also becomes involved in this is virtual application connections that allow you to utilize the ability to have applications talk to each other even when you're delivering it through Configuration Manager. So these are options that are available for virtual application connection, but most importantly, you can use that as well. And lastly, you have the application web catalog. You can actually deliver the application through the web catalog. It's available just like you have regular applications. You can pull it down and utilize it that way as well. So it's one of the things where you save time by having an administrator deliver, provision that application, and then the end user can consume it whenever on an as-need basis. So moving forward, let's move into the process of talking about what we were just showing. And what I have here are a number of systems. I'm going to pull up my Configuration Manager server. Some of this is already configured for you, but I want to show you what it looks like when you're actually working to configure an application to use for virtual, to deliver to an end system. So I have my application list. So applications are available within the options. So we're going to quickly just go ahead and create an application just to show you what you'd be seeing when you're moving forward towards it. We have AppView 4, the 4.0 option, and AppView 5.0. We're going to select the AppView 5.0. You can select the location of where your applications are. I'm going to go ahead and select this location. I'll select my source, applications, and I have a number of applications that are available now that I can pull down to my system. I'm going to go ahead and select Foxit Reader. And the key here is that it always looks for the .appv extension with the 5.0 version. So it has a number of files. So if I show you, let's show you really quick what that looks like so you know what to expect. It then reads that .appv extension and knows that everything else is contained within that same location, and it will be able to pull down what it needs. For those of you that attended a session before, we covered much of the components that are found within that application. So for example, in the Foxit Reader, I have the .appv file. The MSI, if I decided to, I could actually deliver that MSI separately. And you have the deployment and the user config files. Both of those files need to be there as well. Again, you don't necessarily need the report. That's just for when you're dealing with sequencing. So let's go ahead and move forward. Go ahead and retrieve the application. As you can see, what happens is the content is made available within the .appv console. I can fill in the information as needed. For example, Foxit Reader. Most of you guys know how to do that. And from there, we move into importing that application into the Configuration Manager environment. And from here, what we would do next is to deploy it to the distribution points. I'm going to do it in one step, just using the deploy option. And then we'll just look at having it delivered to the end system, end user device. We'll just give it just a second here. It's pulling the content. It should take another 10 seconds. 10. No, I'm just kidding. And once it's in there, the next phase is to make sure that you're deploying it out to the clients. There we go. You see your success criteria. And now I would go next into that application. I would then select deploy, or I can distribute the content, and you even have the option to simulate the deployment. Now, this is more of a configuration manager feature. For the intent of talking about just delivering it using .appv, I've created a .appv users group. I'm going to select to have that application deployed. I then specify my distribution point. And you have the option of selecting the available or the required deployment. For this demo, to speed things up, I'm going to go ahead and select the required. And then we'll come back and look at some of the settings that actually help you ensure that this data stays on the system. So you can have the application pre-deployed to the system. And we're going to go ahead and just leave it as required and leave the default settings. You can specify the scheduled deployment if you want to do it at a later point in time. You know, you're free to do that. But we're going to use the normal as soon as possible option. Another feature that was added is to determine where that application actually remains and whether to use OpsMan to alert you if there are any issues. We've gone ahead and selected the default for all the settings, and at that point it then distributes the application to the endpoint, the location on the endpoint system. So at this point I have three different applications, and if I want to monitor and determine what that status is of that deployment, I can come straight here to the application to see whether it's been distributed to the deployment, to the distribution point, and the success criteria. All right? So I have one application installed, one available, and one required. So from there, I would go to an end user system. And to just show you who's part of that group, let's look at that user group just really quick. I have my user collections, and I have three members in that group. I'm going to be using Paul for now. So Paul now has the ability to access that application on any system that he's using. So I'm going to jump over to one of my clients. While that one's booting up, I will jump over to my second client. And currently, I'm logged on with Paul. And what I'm going to do is I'll make sure that Paul receives that request quite quickly. So we're going to speed things up just to move things forward. And we're going to run the action to do a machine policy retrieval and a user policy retrieval just to ensure the data gets pulled down to that system. Done. And at that point, it begins the process of processing where that application is. There you go. Download the software itself. And It's much quicker now with Configuration Manager 2012 Service Pack 1. You're able to see that application pull down fairly quickly, and you'll see that it shows up here. Downloading 11% complete.
And everybody's happy about that, right?
the amount of time that it takes to actually pull it down. Now, and just to show you a little bit more, some of you may already know this. You have the content always will pull down to your CCM cache. If you, as an admin, you should know exactly where that data is actually being pulled down. And then it will be also put into the AppV cache store. So the beauty of this is you have you have to provision for the fact that you might need more space on that end user system, whether it's a physical system or a virtual system, because the amount of space that you is consumed on that client is dependent on the number of applications you have that's been sequenced and delivered to the end system.
It's the elegance of that solution.
And as I mentioned earlier, you have the option to pull down the application from the application catalog. I don't believe mine is configured correctly, so I will not move to that until a later point. So before we move forward, we'll go ahead and launch the application just to make sure that it does what we want it to do. So all the sequencing would have happened much earlier in time. Go ahead and pull this up. And you'll see my applications are here as well. And at that point, the application is available for you to use. So that's just the basic application virtualization delivery from Configuration Manager. Nothing tricky about it. The only other piece I'd want to make sure that you guys are aware of is the ability to pull up a software library, use virtual environments. So if you wanted to associate different applications together, just like in virtual application connections and virtual application extensions, you can actually go through and create virtual environments where you say, I want to associate two different applications together and ensure that when it's delivered, that those applications are able to see each other within the same bubble. So, for example, if I walked, just double check my applications, I have three applications on here. I'm going to use TextPad and Foxit Reader. If I wanted to ensure that those applications could talk to each other in a virtual bubble, what would happen is now these two aren't necessarily associated. I could then specify those two applications as the applications that I want to have as part of my virtualization environment options. You can then go here and select, see your options, decide what you need, which components of that application you want to select, and determine how you want to deliver it down to the end system. So I add this one, I add number one, I add number two application, give it a group name. And at that point, I can choose to say, group these applications. From there, I can deliver that virtual environment to the end system, just the same, ensure that it's actually available for the end user when they're actually utilizing the application.
So how is that different from connection group?
I'll let Steve answer that one.
Nomenclature.
So again, connection groups work fairly similar. There's nothing special about it. The idea is that you're using Configuration Manager to deliver all of the AppV components to the end system. So that's just the basic run through of the application virtualization delivery through Configuration Manager. So we've talked about Citrix, Citrix integration. We've talked about Configuration Manager and AppV integration. So we'll move on to the desktop virtualization and desktop virtualization components. Is that Steve?
Yeah.
So how many of you are looking at or are currently evaluating desktop virtualization solutions? What are your challenges? Well, the challenges, of course, besides the obvious things like hardware or storage management, user state management, application profiles, consistency. Earlier this week, there was an excellent presentation on the replaceable PC given by Ron Dockery, and many of those technologies work well with AppV and desktop virtualization. Now, I'm going to use the concept of Microsoft desktop virtualization because obviously when we refer to the Microsoft stack, we're referring to Hyper-V and the advanced provisioning options that come with System Center. But AppV is, as a separate entity, is designed to work with other VDI solutions, Citrix Zen Desktop, even VMware Vue. We've been exploring options over the years for what can we do to AppV5 to enhance the VDI experience. So, I press the top button here?
Left.
Left button.
Right.
Okay. So, folder redirection and user experience virtualization allow us to avoid using things that can possibly degrade the performance of the actual VDI experience. For example, UEV and folder redirection actually provide a much better experience for user-centric consistency than legacy technologies like roaming user profiles. The idea of having an app in a self-contained format is always at the core, always at the center. So we want AppV to have flexible publishing options. We want you to be able to either stream this, we want you to be able to republish this using Remote App or using Zen App, or better yet, maybe not stream at all. Maybe do everything over the network. Reduce your storage costs, possibly. The operating system, of course, Windows everywhere. AppV5 is designed for the modern operating system, Windows 7, Windows 8, which those operating systems are optimized for the VDI experience in the box. The operating system platform, in this case, would be client Hyper-V and Med-V if you decide to go the route of client-hosted virtualization. Now, as far as client-hosted virtualization, Med-V is entering sunset, I should advise, because Med-V is only for legacy operating systems, which those two are coming out of support. In fact, people ask me this all the time. Well, Med-V's in support till 2016. Windows XP goes out of support in 2014. Does this mean that if you use XP with Med-V that you can have XP supported virtually until 2016? No. Windows XP goes out of support next year, regardless of how it's being implemented.
Anyone still running XP? Just call us.
Now, the idea is to leverage System Center 2012 to manage, provision, automate all of this. Provisioning your VMs with Virtual Machine Manager. Provisioning your services with the service provisioning elements of System Center. Server at V is part of that, and we'll talk a little bit about Server at V when we get into service virtualization. So, as I mentioned earlier, desktop virtualization options, while we prefer that you use a Microsoft stack, you're not forced into a Microsoft stack. There is nothing that prevents at V from working with non-Microsoft hypervisors. The only stipulation for AppV in terms of the desktop and the RDS client is it has to run on a Windows operating system. So when people ask me, how do I deliver AppV applications to my Android devices? How do I deliver AppV applications to my iPads, for example? Well, that's where you would leverage a partner to republish those applications. So you can still have the consistent one-click deployment methodology of AppV and preservation and state separation of code and assets into an isolated format and just republish it using a partner solution to those non-Microsoft end-user devices. So let's talk about user experience virtualization, or UEV, as you know. So what is user experience virtualization? User experience virtualization is taking those settings and preferences for a particular shell or an application and state separating it, self-containing it, and putting it in a location that allows just those granular elements to roam. Now, a roaming user profile roams a lot. It can get quite bloaty. How many of you are using roaming user profiles right now? How many of you have had to leverage a partner solution in order to get around the roaming user profile problem? Right. And UEV is designed to be a choice for user experience virtualization. I want to make that clear. UEV is Microsoft's solution for both native applications and virtual applications designed to allow settings to roam at the application level or at the shell level. Now, the goal for UEV was to pretty much allow consistency at the application level, because people may have applications running not only on different devices, but also in different formats. You may actually have an application that you use at a desktop. You may have an application that may also be used on a tablet or a kiosk computer. And depending on the application, or depending on where the application resides, that application may be in AppV format. It may be natively deployed via MSI. It may actually, if you're using an Android, it may be republished, like using Citrix, for example. The idea behind UEV is to allow consistency across those formats so you don't have to set your preferences on all of your different devices because the applications are in different formats. It also allows you to use common application settings across certain operating systems themselves. For example, let's switch over to my machine real quick. People have come up to me at the MDOT booth. I'll be there as well later today if anybody would like to talk further. But people have been asking me about UEV, and I've been amazed at the UEV interest. And so I'm here to tell you, not only do I talk about UEV, but I'm also a user of UEV. It's like, not only am I the president of the Hair Club for Men, I'm also a client. But what I want to tell you is what I do every day with UEV. I use UEV right now myself to roam 24 applications. These are the computers that I have. I have a Windows 8 laptop, which is my primary work computer that I take with me on the road. In addition, I have a desktop in my home office, which is running on Windows 7. I don't get home a lot because I travel a lot, so it's still on Windows 7. I have test machines that I use for my hypervisors, one running Windows Server 2008 R2 and one running Windows Server 2012. I, a lot of times, have to use tools on all four of those devices. All four of those devices are in different phases of network connectivity. Some connect exclusively through direct access. Some I have to connect via extranet or VPN. And then I have a couple of lab machines that actually sit on a campus computer actually directly connected. All of these computers allow me for certain key applications to synchronize my settings. And so the typical UEV end user is going to have very minimal UEV assets themselves sitting on their computer. There is no back-end infrastructure to UEV. The typical UEV user is going to be like me. They may potentially have different operating systems. I deal with different application formats myself because I use AppV a lot, and whenever possible, I will try to virtualize my own applications. I like to eat my own dog food, so it makes sense. So UEV has been a lifesaver for me. As you can see, the templates are very lightweight. I leverage templates from the community. I create my own templates using the UEV settings generator. So if you don't find a template out there, it's just like at V. Use the settings generator in UEV and make yourself one. How many of you work at schools? How many of you work in offices where you want to ensure that user settings get preserved? UEV is an awesome, awesome solution for that. And because it doesn't require a back-end infrastructure, all you're really concerned with is agent deployment and deployment of the settings templates, which can be integrated into Config Manager. You can also leverage default group policy mechanisms that come with UEV as well to deploy and register the settings templates. You can even use our sample templates that we give out as well. So the next question that I want to talk about is another one I've gotten this week. What's the real overhead? What is the real storage cost of UEV? Because there is a storage cost for UEV. The storage cost comes in the actual storing of the settings. And people were concerned because in the past with AtV, we would virtualize the user state for that application if the user state directories and registry settings were included in the application. We stored these in PKG files, and we put the PKG files in AppData. And that way, if you redirected app data, you could actually travel and roam. Well, sometimes, especially in terminal server environments, the PKG files would get large and they would get bloaty. Well, as part of the redesign for UEV, or the redesign for AtV5, we had, with the development of UEV, the concept of the PKGX format, where we would state separate the registries into PKGX files, and we would manage the files differently to minimize the file size. So, and we would encourage users, and I will encourage you as well, to simplify the roaming experience to take advantage of client-side caching or offline folders. UEV does not require offline folders as its sync method, but I would encourage it because that way your settings are always available offline. If you synchronize or change settings offline, as soon as you get back to the corporate network, it will resync those settings with your settings storage path. So my settings storage path is basically on a network share that is actually not in my home directory. MSIT does not necessarily use home directories unless the user specifies it. So I don't actually use a home directory. So I maintain my settings in an exclusive share. So my settings look something like this. The store for each individual user should be a master directory, and within each directory, based off what you name the template in the XML, you're going to have a folder for each individual application. As you can see, I have both Microsoft and non-Microsoft applications, and I have my business productivity applications. I have things like SysInternals, Procmon, and Process Explorer that I use a lot. Those are primarily the use case for me moving from operating system to operating system sometime. I have debugging tools for Windows because I have preferences there. I don't want to have to go in every time I get a new machine and reload the symbol path. And then I also have my fun applications. I still love the Zoom player. I know Xbox Music is the way to go, but I love the Zoom player. And so I still use it. So what I want to tell you real quick is the total size and storage for my 24 settings, which include about 20 applications and some OS settings, is less than 6 megs. Not a lot of overhead. Now, that will vary from application to application depending on what you're actually roaming. For example, when I'm roaming settings with the PowerShell ISE, most of those settings are pretty much going to be registry-based only. If I'm roaming settings with Procmon, it's going to be mostly registry settings. However, if I am roaming, for example, my themes, there might be some files that come in, and you'll see the pkg.dat file. If I'm roaming Outlook settings with Outlook 2010, obviously there's going to be lots of file settings as well as registry settings. So just to briefly touch on some talking points, I found it better to actually show you the user experience, to show you what the actual settings look like, to show you the XML. You'll see how lightweight it actually is, and that's the design. Setting storage location, again, AD home directory or a standard network share. I do want to point out you can use DFS in, you can use DFS namespaces, but DFSR is not yet supported. So be advised of that. SkyDrive integration is not in place yet either, but we have heard the feedback on that as well and looking into that. So the UEV agent can be a user-initiated setup. It can actually be deployed alongside of the ATV5 client. You can deploy the agent easily using Config Manager and even put it as part of the base image along with the ATV5 client if you're deploying using MDT, for example, or OSD within Config Manager. And again, the setting location template, it's a template catalog path. I keep mine local, but the template catalog path does not have to be local. That can be on a shared drive as well. Or you can deploy them using your ESD. So, UEV requirements, Windows 7, Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows 8, or Windows Server 2012. Offline files actually you don't have to sync using offline files. I would highly recommend it to optimize the user experience. So benefits of ATV and UEV integration, it's a great complement with ATV because you can use UEV to roam settings. For example, a lot of people who are dealing with the current issue with ATV5, which has issues with app data being redirected, I've actually looked into UEV as a deployment, and they like it because the only reason they were redirecting app data was why? To keep application consistency across multiple, for example, multiple Citrix farms. They find that UEV allows a little bit better integration and a little bit easier integration. And you only have to roam the settings you need. When you're roaming app data or redirecting app data, you're taking everything. You may not need to be roaming everything. The UEV agent is lightweight, has a filter driver to work at the kernel level to actually speed up things and speed up processes. Works through a combination of scheduled tasks. Works great, again, with offline files. It also operates using a smart login and synchronization element, so you don't have to sit there and watch a screen or bars go by. A lot of people like UEV simply because they don't have to watch the network file transfer copies every time a user logs off or something to that effect. Settings, again, right now are just file and registry settings, though. But again, it's very simple to configure. There's no back-end infrastructure, no SQL requirements either. However, I do want to point out a lot of people talk about V2 or V1 profile support. V1 profile support is anything prior to Windows Vista. Well, not everything prior to Windows Vista, but like Windows XP, Windows 2000. So a lot of people, because Windows XP is going out of support at end of life, they are dealing with the migration of users, dealing with the actual migration of user state. And if you are looking to decide whether you're dealing with UEV versus maybe a partner solution like AppSense AEM or REA's Workspace Manager or Imedio's Flex Profiles, If you're looking at a complex deployment, or you want to roam settings greater than file and registry settings, or you want to do things like rollback, or if you want to start mandating settings. People ask me with one of the big questions I have with UEV is, can I use UEV for applications in a similar way that I use mandatory profiles, for example? Can I force settings on individual applications? And I would advise you might want to look into a partner solution as well. And again, AppV works great with our partner solutions and their user experience virtualization products as well. So I want to continue talking a little bit about storage virtualization. Now, storage virtualization is kind of a vague topic, but conceptually, storage virtualization is storing the file at a place that the user does not realize or have any knowledge of where it is. Now, the ultimate storage virtualization is obviously the cloud, right? Well, in the context of AppV, that was a challenge with working with VDI, for example, because the problem with VDI and virtual applications and streaming is going to be your overall storage cost. Now, products like Hyper-V have great things like dynamic memory to kind of optimize the use of your primary storage, which is memory. But when it comes to your secondary storage, disk space, real estate as we call it, especially in scenarios like pooled VDI, we kind of need a one-to-many storage approach. Now, in AppV4.6, we introduce something called the shared cache, or the read-only cache, which some were able to use successfully, but we got a lot of feedback on that. And some of the feedback we got on that was, it's kind of an all-or-nothing scenario. The shared cache allowed multiple machines in either an RDS or a VDI environment to all leverage the actual same cache. This cache was treated as a local cache, but redirected using high-speed storage transfer technologies over the network to a central SMB share. The problem was staging was very difficult. You had to have a staging machine, and you had to provision all of your applications using the staging machine. And if you had 150, 250 virtualized applications, you would have to load all of those into that staging machine to populate that shared cache. You would use something like the AppV management server. Actually, you would use the AppV management server to determine what user had what access to what applications. But if it came time to update an application or to add an application, you had to disengage the entire populace of the VDI. And you had to disengage because everybody was connected directly to that cache as if it were a local file system.
So how many people have terminal service farms? So how often do you reboot all your servers?
Daily.
So that's part of the problem.
Also, if you had network disconnects, that would do some drastic things to your VDI environment. You'd pretty much have to reboot every single VDI to reestablish that connection. So with AppV5, what we did was introduce the shared content store. The shared content store is essentially file system abstraction for AppV5. It allows for streaming of the application content directly from the store. Applications are accessed in a very straightforward process, either using either using the SMB protocol or using the HTTP protocol. It also, unlike the previous implementations of our shared cache, the shared content store works in pretty much most AppV implementations. We got a lot of feedback in 4.6 about how they would like to use things like the shared cache with Config Manager integration. Well, now you can use the shared cache with Config Manager integration. You can use it even in standalone mode. You can use it, of course, with a traditional AppV management server. Your shared cache can be on a SAN, a NAS attached device, a file share, a DFS share, a web server. You just have to ensure that you're accessing it using using a modern NATS protocol. Now, to get the best benefits, obviously you want to have an optimized network stack, because when you're actually, as we're going to demonstrate, when you're actually looking at the shared content store and actually are concerned about performance, you're going to want to plan accordingly. In the case of a VDI solution, you're going to be working with individual desktops. So obviously, you're going to be more concerned with getting those applications to those virtual desktops as quickly as possible. If you're dealing with an RDS environment, you're also going to want to ensure that you have adequate memory, because essentially the way this works, as I'm going to demonstrate, the files are not really going to ever be present. When we say storage optimization, we really mean it when it comes to the shared content store. So let's talk a little bit about the shared content store. Yes.
Question was, can you put it behind DFS?
It depends. How many applications are going to be loaded? The question was, how do we scale memory, and what are the memory requirements for things like RDS? So you're going to have to assess your applications. You're going to have to not necessarily be concerned so much about the number of users accessing it, as you are going to be concerned about the number of applications and what the normal resource consumption is going to be of these individual applications. Testing is going to be critical. So here I am, I'm playing with my little AppV client, and I've got this client configured to actually launch a few applications. Rumba's always a popular one. Got a little bit of a PowerPoint viewer app here, yeah. Of course, PowerPoint Viewer doesn't really do anything, but I've got these applications running. I've got these applications launched. So now, if I go to the package root, it's going to appear at first that I have files there. But you're going to notice these files have little markers, little special markers here. These markers denote that these are actually something called a sparse file. A sparse file is essentially a file that has been allocated but has not been populated. So its actual size on disk is not going to be what it actually displays. So for example, this little file here, registry.dat, is supposed to be 512K, but it's actually 4K. Size on disk. In fact, you're going to find most of your sparse files are actually going to take up 4K on the disk, because that's, or whatever the block size is for NTFS on that disk. So where is the file? The file is in memory. And again, memory is important. Now, another thing that's great about shared content, about the shared content store, is it's very easy to configure. You enable shared content store, and then you have a package source root. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about service virtualization. Service virtualization is essentially doing the same thing we do for an application, but we're actually doing it for an application that runs on a server itself. So, how many of you are familiar with our server at V product? Okay. Think of server at V as being at V for servers, literally. Many things you can virtualize on a server, but you don't necessarily want to isolate them, but you want to have the benefits that at V has in terms of state separation and rapid one-click deployment and some of the modern features like one command deployment with PowerShell. So you can automate and provision not only servers, but you can actually provision pre-configured server applications. You know that server application that has that 128-page installation manual? Well, server at V is designed to change that into a one-step process. Server virtualization benefits? Well, simplify the deployment of applications. Take advantage of VMM service templates. If you have System Center 2012, you have server at V. It's delivered as part of VMM, but it's not strictly limited to VMM. You don't necessarily have to use server at V on virtual machines. You could actually use server at V on physical machines as well. You don't have to use server at V specifically as a VMM component, which is our virtual machine manager component. You can use server at V manually and deploy it, integrate the PowerShell that comes with it with other provisioning solutions as well. And it literally turns your server apps into images that can be serviced as such and deployed as such. Seamless OS updating and patching. More server-side features that you would not have in client at V, like support for COM+, support for WMI. Obviously, you're going to need these when you're dealing with most server-side applications. Support for local groups, support for services. And again, server at V can actually aid your at V rollout as well. If you're looking to deploy at V and you're deploying at V initially in a proof of concept, a proof of concept is going to be relatively small. Typically, we move from proof of concept to some type of test pilot. And we move from a test pilot to a production pilot. And then we move from production pilot to more of a scaled out deployment. Well, the challenges with that have been phasing and simplification, and also a fear that I get is fear of drastic success, early success. Let's say you're testing at V to a pilot of 10 or 15 users, and then all of a sudden you now have 1,000 people asking for this application delivered virtually, 15,000 people a week or two later, and you've got to scale out an at V infrastructure rapidly. Server at V allows you to scale things like the publishing server, the management server. You can, if you're using our reporting capabilities in at V5, we have reporting services as well that leverages SSRS. If you need to scale out SSRS, you can take advantage of server at V to do that. You can do this with server at V and VMM and develop service tiers. You can actually do it out of band of VMM. So, how does server at V work? Well, you're going to recognize a few elements right offhand. You package this virtual application, which I like to say is more really state separated. You package it the same way you would package, or at least a similar way as you would do a client-side application using a sequencer. So what we're going to do real quick is we're just going to step through a sequence of the at V publishing server real quick. So we're going to create a new virtual application package. And in this case, I'm not concerned that I don't have, because we have detectoids with this sequencer. If you're going to have an application that's going to be connecting and you want to virtualize connections to a back-end SQL server, you're going to want to ensure that you have the SQL prereqs as well. In this case, I'm actually just going to be sequencing the publishing server, so I'm not concerned that I don't have these. I'm going to perform a custom implementation. I'm a custom installer, and then I'm going to use the name appvpub as the name of my package. Now, I want to point out that there's some confusing elements of Server appv. Server appv development and release took place in between appv 4.6 and appv 5. So you're going to see elements of both inside Server appv. For example, Server appv has the capability of natively browsing the actual assets, but we still use a Q drive, for example, unlike v5, where the Q drive goes away. So Server appv still, as of this release, has the Q drive. And we wait, because we're prepping for monitoring as well. And in most cases, the same caveats for the Server appv sequencer or for the client appv sequencer apply to the Server appv sequencer as well.
Let's just notice the list on the left is a lot shorter.
So, for some reason, this is going a little bit slower than I anticipated. That's it.
While we're waiting for this, we can start summarizing the event. So we talked about AppV, we talked about Citrix, we talked about UEV and the environment of virtualization. We talked about server virtualization and AppV server. All right, so
Server appv.
Server appv, sorry. So we have a really good story to tell with the integration of all these components to be able to provide different use case solutions across the product line.
So now I'm launching the installer for the appv server component. And again, this, as you can see, the process is very similar to the client appv sequencer. I'm going to select install. And again, I'm only going to capture the publishing server, and I would advise that if you are leveraging Server appv to scale out your appv infrastructure, that you take advantage of state separating all of your components, because you're, depending on how you architect a back end of an appv5 infrastructure, you may have publishing servers in different locations from management servers for the purposes of high availability and resilience. So you want to be able to keep these where you can actually scale them out. You may decide that you want to deploy them to the same box, but you want to give yourself some flexibility. So in this case, I'm actually going to put this in. Going back to a 4.6 practice.
So this is the only instance that you'd go back to a 4.6 practice.
Mm-hmm. Now, as I type in information here, this is going to be preserved as what we refer to as configuration items. Configuration items can also be managed and configured and added at the very end. So I'm going to be pointing this to my whatever backend management server I have. And I want to point this out because of the flexibility of Server appv, even if you don't put exactly what you have here now, that can actually be adjusted by simply opening up the package and modifying the configuration items. I'm going to set my binding here. I'm just going to use .12 and the test binding for this port service. And as we're nearing the end of time here, because it looks like we are, I do want to ensure that, go ahead, you can go ahead and keep it back on this.
Okay.
Because they're going to probably run us in or run us out shortly. Feel free to come up if you have any questions. Feel free to reach out to any one of us. I'll be again at the MDOT booth along with my coworkers as well. We also have PMs here who can also answer your questions on not only at V, but we also have PMs here in System Center who also support Server at V as well and work with Server at V.
We've captured the related sessions that you can go ahead and experience after the conference as well.
So the key here, folks, is to make sure that you're considering AppV with other virtualization solutions as you're rolling it out. There's a number of ways to implement it. What we hope to have moving forward is to introduce how it can be integrated with Citrix in a really good way and have that as also a demo to show you also. But you consider server virtualization as an option as Steve finishes off. Consider UEV as an implementation solution. Desktop virtualization, all of them go well together as long as you understand what's the requirements to ensure that it works in a good environment.
Also, I wasn't kidding about calling us. There were a lot of people that said they're still in XP, right? Microsoft Consulting Services has a rapid solution deployment service to help you get past that hump to Windows 7 or Windows 8 for 1,000 PCs and 100 applications to get you a real quick start if you need some assistance with that. Call your Microsoft rep on that.
Can you switch me real quick?
So again, for those of you who have to leave, thanks for showing up. And we'll go ahead and answer questions afterwards.